Welcome back to Power of the Mind, the podcast where we give you simple tools to improve your relationship with yourself and with others. In today's episode, we talk about Stockholm Syndrome. Super, super interesting. Some of the implications it has for domestic violence. It's not a perfect parallel, but they do translate relatively well. We talk about the attachment system and how it plays into things. And then we tell you how to hide a body. So you got to watch this one.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Cast 11, Talking Glass Media, Power of the Mind, presented by Granite Mountain Behavioral Health Care. I'm here as always with Greg Struby.
Hi.
How's it going?
Oh, good.
And we brought in
our friend Marilee
Mills. We brought Marilee in today because we talked about, how many murder shows and podcasts do you listen to?
On the daily, at least three different podcasts and documentaries, probably five or six a week.
And wow, that's a pretty impressive.
It's a large intake. Yeah,
You ever think about being like a profiler for the FBI?
Yes,
I have thought about that. The profiler
guy?
Yes,
yeah, and the development of the BSU to the BAU and the FBI. I've thought about being like, do you know what? Maybe I should go and do a little school similar to what you did.
Sure,
but then go a totally
Master's
different
in forensic
path.
Psychology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thought about it, but
I actually had a therapist who worked for me who got a master's in forensic psychology and decided she didn't like looking at dead bodies anymore.
Oh, that is a very fair.
Yeah, I wanted to work with people on the other side.
Yeah, before they get to that point. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
So what light, fun topic did you want us to talk about today?
I wanted to talk about Stockholm Syndrome.
Oh, always a favorite.
Always a favorite, right? It's kind of weird because you're like, why would... The original case is a little bit crazy with the bank robbery, and that the victims or the hostages in that case testified on the side of the perpetrator.
Yeah.
It got to that extent. Like, it was in 1973 in Stockholm, hence Stockholm Syndrome. And they were like, this guy's great. He didn't mistreat us. He didn't do anything wrong. I don't know why you're arresting him. Like, it was a pretty, you're like, well, because he kept you hostage for multiple days in a bank vault. Like, what do you mean? Why are we arresting him? And so I wanted to talk about that because it goes kind of into that evolutionary that we break down psychology to.
Yeah, evolutionary psychology is one of my favorite branches of the, the field.
So cool.
Looking at the biology of that. Mm-hmm. And it actually makes a lot of sense. So we talk about the nervous system responses to adversity and challenge. Mm-hmm. You have the brain. If you think about the brain, it works well to think about it as if it were separated into sort of three broad parts, and a neuroscientist would probably scold me for this categorization, but I'll go for it anyway. The cerebral cortex is the part of us that makes us uniquely human. It's on the outside of the brain. And then you get into the limbic system a little further down, and then the brainstem further down still. The limbic system is common to all mammals, and I think the brainstem is common to lizards and mammals. I think that's how evolutionarily it works off the top of my head. But long story short, when we get into trouble, the fight-flight system turns on, and the cerebral cortex, that's the fight-flight system is the limbic system. Mm-hmm. The cerebral cortex turns off. So limbic system says, run or attack. And the cerebral cortex says, huh? Like a couple minutes later, basically. If you think about if you were walking down the hallway and a Bengal tiger came around the corner, mm-hmm. you would often discover that you were running away before you really thought through, like, wait, is that a Bengal tiger? Or is that like, is that an African? Is that Serengeti tiger? Indian tiger?
The stripes kind of,
I don't know about
Is it male or female?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I wonder what kind of tiger. That's what the cerebral cortex is good for.
Okay.
It's not good for, let's get the hell out of Dodge, mm-hmm. right? Let's get moving. Mm-hmm. And that's the fight-flight system. Well, the fight-flight system is not always going to work. Like, there are times you cannot fight and you cannot flee.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you're stuck in a bank vault
with someone
because
with a
dude has a gun,
yeah,
you can't fight the guy with the gun. You'll lose.
Mm-hmm.
You can't run away. You're in a bank
mm-hmm.
vault.
Mm-hmm.
So the next alternative, well, we have a couple choices at this point. The next one is called fawn, and then freeze. I don't know why these all start with F, but it's a thing. I
Convenience
guess.
Works. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably could have picked a different word than fawn. Somebody picked fawn because it started with F, is my guess. But freeze is the override process that mm-hmm. happens when you cannot run away or flee, and it shuts the nervous system down and gets us dissociated, which can actually be quite handy. If what's happening inside the body isn't conducive to our survival,
mm-hmm.
then freeze comes on. And fawn is sort of a specialty of human beings in terms of our capacity to connect with our captors, right? It's social engagement and social connection is what makes us the apex predator on Earth. One person by themselves is really just a tasty snack in the woods. Get a bunch of us together and we can invent stuff and team up and think of different strategies and learn and grow and, okay, Johnson got eaten. Mm-hmm. Maybe we shouldn't go into that cave, or if we do go into that cave, we should exercise some caution, mm-hmm. right?
So we bring a torch and a knife.
Bring a torch and a knife in that mm-hmm. case. Let's hold some fire this time and see. Okay,
yeah,
it ate Johnson. I got the fire. Didn't eat me. We're on to something here.
Fire's good.
So the fawn response mm-hmm. is the natural response when fight and flight are either incompatible with the situation mm-hmm. or have been tried and don't work. Mm-hmm. And Stockholm syndrome. Is the impact of the fawn response. I mean, this is sort of a simplistic explanation of mm-hmm. it as I understand it, but it's an effective one. It's the impact of the fawn response in an emergency situation. Mm-hmm. I convince myself that I have love and affection for my captor in an effort to win her or his favor. Mm-hmm. And when said favor is won, I believe my chances of survival are better.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
If it works and it keeps you alive, keep doing it.
That's it. And the other thing is people very rarely will do nothing unless they're really in a deep state of mm-hmm. freeze. But even being in freeze isn't doing nothing, right? Mm-hmm. It's just freeze. Yeah. There has to be a response. Mm-hmm. We won't sit around. And so we just pick the most logical response. Our body actually really is. It's almost mm-hmm. more the body that picks the most logical response versus us. And you see the fawn response in a lot of domestic violence situations mm-hmm. as well.
You know? Makes sense. You get a positive. If you mother up to them, baby them, do an action that creates a positive response, you're going to keep doing that action.
Right. So. Well, in really dark domestic violence situations, mm-hmm. I believe that if I fight, I'll lose.
Yeah.
And I'll lose something. You know, maybe I'll lose custody. Maybe I'll lose my life. Maybe I'll lose my health.
Significant other.
And if I flee in a really dark domestic violence situation, you know, one of the first things that somebody who is an abuser will do is take away that option one way or another with threats of harm. You know, I worked with somebody one time who their abuser had been a cop, mm-hmm. right? Well, you're not going to run very far from a cop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at least the cop is going to tell you you're not going to run very far from the cop. You know, how much capacity they actually have to track you down is probably up for some discussion, but mm-hmm. So fight and flight are out. Now what? What's the answer? Well, I got to keep living. I got to mm-hmm. protect the people in my environment.
Mm-hmm.
So fawn is the next piece, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
But do those people like believe that, like with Stockholm syndrome, this mm-hmm. the one in the bank? If they testified that this guy was okay, did they believe it? Did they just see he was a great guy? You know, so.
And that was after the fact when their body should have came out of a panic response.
Or whatever, yeah.
Well, you know, if you talk to somebody, there's another part of Stockholm syndrome related to the attachment system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the attachment system will attach at all costs. And it is particularly triggered to attach under situations of long-term duress. So I'll give you an example of my own life, a really cool story about the attachment system. So I'm getting on a plane going to Bend, Oregon. I used to work for a company called Fred Pryor Seminars, and we would do seminars on sort of basic psychology around the country and use it to train people to do management and stuff like that. So I get on the plane, and I've flown a fair amount by this time. And right, just not too far after we took off, you heard the ding that comes on when the plane's going to reroute.
Mm-hmm.
And the plane turned to the side, I don't know, about 25 degrees. I mean, it was a really, and you know, it wasn't like, we're going to crash. It was mm-hmm. just like a really big turn for a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And it did it for a long time. It was very good. I was like, what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
So then it dings again and comes back up. Like, all right, well, that's weird, but whatever. I didn't know why we had to do such a huge turn to get to Bend, Oregon. And the captain comes on and says, ladies and gentlemen, we are getting reports from the stewardesses that there is smoke coming from the back of the cabin. We're going to go ahead and make an emergency landing at Sky Harbor, and the fire department will be greeting us when we land. Okay, so where there's smoke, there's
fire.
Yeah, my plane's on fire. Okay, that's
but he
not.
He didn't say that.
Well, he didn't say that. That's true. He said there is smoke coming from the back of my aircraft.
And the fire department will be there.
And we are going to make an emergency landing.
Some guys with hoses will.
5 minutes. If we've been in the air like for 10 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to be making a. And I was like, and I remembered the story from Flight 93. The guy had called his wife and told his wife he loved her. And I was like, well, I don't have any cell coverage, but maybe as we get closer, I'll be able to call my wife.
You could feel,
yeah, you could feel it was a full flight. I think it was a DC-9. And you could feel the energy in the room. You know, I talk sometimes about a carried or a shared experience of emotion. And that's what happens at like a good rock concert, right? You go to an AC/DC concert and you leave like, whoa, pumped up, woo.
Friends with everybody around.
Yeah, it's great, man. But we have some shared emotional experience with 30, 40,000 people. That's a pretty remarkable experience. Well, in this case, me and these other 200 people had a shared experience of terror because our plane was on fire.
Yeah.
And so what happened next was really interesting. All the flight attendants went to the front of their respective cabins in a DC-9. Mm-hmm. I think there was three cabins, sort of, right? There's the first class. Mm-hmm. Then there's the front of
business,
coach.
Yeah.
And then there's like a bathroom and sort of a little nubby spot where people can congregate kind of in the middle toward the back. And so there were a set of flight attendants in all three of these spots. Mm-hmm. And they started to laugh and play with each other and joke with the people. They didn't have no Cokes, no peanuts. Mm-hmm. They just laughed and joked. And I vividly remember this one gal laughing at a joke that her friend told her, her other stewardess friend told her, and leaning forward and just touching this dude in front of her and smiling. And you could feel the entire thing go.
They're not nervous, right?
Why? Yeah. So no matter how many, and again, I was flying, you know, every week at this point. I had plenty of miles under mm-hmm. my belt. And I'm sure there are people on the flight who had years and years and years and years and years of flying even more than that. Mm-hmm. So no matter how many miles you have under your belt, when you don't know what to do, when something is wrong, bad wrong, and you don't mm-hmm. have the data, what do? As a human being, you look around, you find somebody you think might know what to do, and you do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
We are herd animals when the shit hits the fan, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Okay.
And so that's what we all did. And the whole thing, it was a really interesting experience. Just the whole place just breathed like this collective sigh of relief, yeah. And I never forgot it. And then we landed and we found out the coffee maker shorted out.
Oh,
so phew. There was, in fact, smoke. But there was no fire.
Yeah.
And then I spent the next day and a half trying to get to Bend. It was awful. But I was still glad that I had that experience because mm-hmm. it was a worthwhile example of how the attachment system works.
Okay.
So with Stockholm Syndrome,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know quite as much about this situation in a domestic violence situation, but with Stockholm mm-hmm. Syndrome, part of the challenge is the nervous system, when it's under duress, looks for the strongest, toughest, kind of most competent appearing individual in the environment, and then says, take care of me. And it jumps into this child state, more or less, right? And the child, the child within comes out and mm-hmm. says, what do I need to do to get your affection? Well, what do kids do to get somebody's affection? The biggest thing kids do is they love them. That's really all you have going for when you're a little kid, is you're mm-hmm. cute.
Mm-hmm.
You're cute and a big bucket of love and pretty helpless. And as human beings, we are innately, evolutionary psychology mm-hmm. will tell you this, we're pretty disarmed by things that are like sort of helpless and adorable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, look at a kitten. Why is a kitten cuter than a cat? Because it's so smaller. Incompetent, right? They wouldn't use that word. Why is a baby cuter than a regular human being?
Baby just threw up on me, but you can't be mad at it.
Oh my gosh, exactly. Robin Williams used to say, you know why God made babies? Cute, so we don't eat them, mm-hmm. right? Speaking of the shadow we talked about last week. But, so that's that's another factor that comes into play when we're talking about Stockholm Syndrome, is the attachment system says, attach to the most competent person around, and the okay. most competent and powerful person around happens also to be exuding power upon me.
The perpetrator.
Right, and... Mm-hmm. It's happening on a neurological level, and it's definitely You know, a lot of times we think our emotions come from our thoughts, cognitive behavioral psychology. Mm-hmm. Basically, all of psychology from the 1960s on mm-hmm. believes that your thoughts create your emotions, which create the way you see the world. There is some truth to that. And what we're figuring out now is there's also the opposite direction will show up. A highly anxious person will walk into a room and find something to be anxious about. Okay, somebody whose nervous system, maybe they have a traumatic past, the nervous system says, be alarmed, be careful in large groups of people. They will walk into a room with a large group of people and they will find where danger is, even if it's not there, right? They will over-identify danger. And so that's, again, a similar process to what mm-hmm. you're looking at in those situations, circumstances.
What I've learned today is that Stockholm Syndrome is just a very intense version of my dog. When I yell at her, instead of running or biting me, she sits on my feet and gets as small as possible and lays on her back and tries to be vulnerable.
That's exactly true. We could have saved like 15 minutes of this episode right there if we just started out like that.
Well, shoot.
She knew more than us.
Jeez Louise.
That's what I've learned today. There it's just go. My dog. There my dog go. Has Stockholm Syndrome. Wow.
So somebody that watches that much, I always call them murder shows. What do you call them? Is it True Life or
True Crime?
True Crime.
True okay. Crime. That's true a much crime. More gentle
it's
way.
It's true and it's criminal.
I like oh. murder shows, but it's so.
It's not all murder.
I've always said, just working right. with her, it's if I needed to hide a body, this is who I would call. And
wow.
Yeah, she's.
I have an answer.
You do.
Okay, yeah, how are you going to. So if you have to hide a body, how do you do it?
So we're recording. So if I ever have to hide a body, really? We have to destroy this
destroy
recording.
This tape. Okay.
That's going to be a challenge. You're really okay. incriminating yourself even
I know.
As we speak.
I don't plan on murdering anyone, though.
Right, Clay, okay. this is for you. We have it on
yes,
video.
Yes, my
now.
Husband. This is for you. So you brought up chemicals,
yeah,
lime,
yeah.
all this stuff that you hear about. The problem with that people don't necessarily think about is how are you getting those chemicals and in the quantities that you need them without having a trail of some format. Right?
Sure,
if
sure.
you go and you buy so many pounds or so many kilograms or whatever of lime, someone's going to be able to find that you did that.
Yeah, there's a list someplace for that.
Exactly. There's a whole list of chemicals that go into explosives, into like decomposition that you have to be approved to buy in any quantity.
Oh, geez, Louise, I'm out of luck.
I know.
This, huh?
So wrong answer already.
But,
you're
but
in prison.
I think she's good.
So yeah. my solution at that point, you also don't want to leave the amount of evidence that would come off a body from dismembering them, breaking them apart, things like that, right? That creates a much bigger mess than a whole body.
Sure.
So I haven't quite worked out how to get them out of the space that you killed them. And hopefully right. you didn't kill them in an overly aggressive, evidentiary, sprawling way. But when you do have a body and it's safely somewhere, I think the best solution would be to find an abandoned mine shaft.
Oh.
Drop them down it, then drop down a couple logs or big pieces of wood. So if that ever floods, whatever's there will not float to the surface. And then you also want to drop a different animal on top of them, something bigger, something like a horse, a donkey, a cow. So if bones are ever found, most likely they'll be identified as a different animal's bones.
Boom.
Boom. That is my best answer so far.
I'm ambivalent about putting this out in the public.
Yeah, I
think
I'm
not confident that
this
is the
not
best
condoned
plan.
By any means.
No, this is not. Cast 11 does not condone this type of behavior.
But what this leads me to, though, is.
Neither does Grand Mom Behavioral Healthcare.
Yeah, so Greg, how'd you get fired from your own podcast? That's yeah. weird. What happened there?
Well, I asked someone how to hide a body, and
the
gave a good answer.
We listened to this thing, and we were talking about this body, and. Yeah.
But
yeah.
what's crazy to me is you start seeing these shows and like mm-hmm. Dexter and how he, you know, I mm-hmm. always comes back to Dexter for me, but
because you love to hate
these.
Him.
I love Dexter, but mm-hmm. the you watch these shows and mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're just telling people how to get away with like murder. Basically, they're
and
showing
there
us how to do it.
There have been serial killers who have tried to emulate what Dexter did and they've always been
really?
Caught because there's a ton of evidence. Because what Dexter did was very.
Well, he was a forensic
quote
guy
unquote,
too, so he could
messy.
Fix it. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. he could fix it, but it also just wouldn't have held up. And our police forces are very
well trained.
Well,
they've all
people.
Watched Dexter too.
Exactly.
I
so they
imagine.
Know exactly what to look for.
I'm going to say there's just no way to get away with murder. So don't do it.
I don't
it.
Think so.
Don't do
it.
Yeah, we officially, we're con murder. Mm-hmm. We're not
yeah.
pro murder.
You're
done
murder.
Con
murder.
Totally against murder.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely against
yep.
murder. However,
that's a stand.
I may know how to hide a body, do not know how to get away with murder. because there's so many things that happen before you just end up with a perfectly no evidence body. That it's just never going to happen.
Also, if you watch enough of these murder shows, you see that they catch you. No matter what
they
you do.
They catch you.
Well, there is a
not
hair.
Not that Green Mile guy, right? No, all of them. Not the Green Mile. That's a Stephen King book. What's the Green River? The Green River Killer? They never caught that one, did they?
Yeah, they all get caught. Everyone gets caught.
BTK took 30 years or so, though. Like, all these killers. Technically, all the Atlanta child murders, they've never been charged. They think they know, and they think they have them in prison, but they can't prove it. There's a couple of those that are pretty high-profile cases. I mean, the Zodiac Killer, right?
Yeah.
One of the most high-profile.
I always thought it'd be cool if the guy who wrote all those books on profiling serial killers turned out to be
a serial killer, because that's how he walks it.
That'd be a good movie plot. You know, like, who's going to catch him? Mm-hmm. Who's going to profile that one guy who's the big...
Because he's brought in to profile.
Exactly. And he trained all the other profilers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk about unlocking your shadow. That big man's shadow.
Well, he's... Yeah, he's
and assuming he's not a serial killer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this is my new favorite episode.
I think it's a good one. It is a good one. I love when we get on.
I can hear Austin laughing as we're walking through that. So you know. That tells us
we're never airing this.
Austin's a good focus group. Austin's a focus group by himself.
I'm like, are we taking this one to print? This is good. Okay,
it's a good one.
All right, this is good. Hide a body. Don't hide a body. Like, if you find a body and you need to hide it, like the you know, somebody
call the police if you find a body.
Call the police. So.
Call the police. Call 911.
A lot of really riveting and valuable information being passed.
Took a turn today.
It did.
Yeah. I'm here anytime you guys want to talk about crimes.
Do you see what happens?
I see.
Marilee brings the dark. So, well, with that said, if you need help finding a body, call her. If you've experienced some traumatic episode and you've found yourself needing to talk to somebody.
Well, Granite Mountain BHC Behavioral Healthcare, granitemountainbhc.com is a great place to get started. And I'm Greg Struve. Yeah. You can look me up as well, gregstruve.com. Mm-hmm. And
perfect.
Some interesting resources on that site also. And thanks for tuning in and thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in to Power of the Mind, presented by Granite Mountain Behavioral Healthcare. See you next time.
For information about mental health and addiction treatment, you can reach out to Granite Mountain Behavioral Healthcare online at granitemountainbhc.com. That's granitemountainbhc.com. Or give us a call at 877-338-6287. That's 877-338-6287. If you have a comment about this podcast or a question you'd like us to address in the podcast, you can check out the Contact Us page at my website, gregstruve.com. That's GREGSTRUV as in Victor, E as in Edward.com. This has been a Cast 11 production brought to you by Granite Mountain Behavioral Healthcare. This episode was produced by Austin Morrison. Follow Cast 11 on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest at Talking Glass Media.